There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
Time now to introduce our two intrepid paper reviewers this afternoon. It is an absolute pleasure to welcome them into the studio. It's a warm welcome and a return welcome to the founder and managing director of Five Little Ducks, a unique premium baby and kids boutique store here in the UAE. We're going from strength to strength. Camilla Hassan, good morning to you.
Hi, good morning, Tom. How are you?
I'm very well indeed. Now, as is tradition, and as is de rigueur around about this time, we ask you just to explain to the listeners a little more about your inspiration, Five Little Ducks.
So we are a premium baby and kids boutique. So we sell everything from strollers to car seats to, you know, shampoos to gifts to everything you could possibly need if you're having a baby. We also have kids stuff. So the last few weeks we've been going absolutely bananas with backpacks and lunch boxes and water bottles and, you know, just everything you can imagine. So it's been crazy.
So, I mean, just continuing that conversation with regards to back to school, obviously it's a busy time of year for you, as is pretty much throughout the entire year. But have you noticed a real focus on back to school this year?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's been the last few weeks. You've got the organised mums that have been in about three, 4 weeks ago and bought everything. And then you've got the last minute ladies who we also have been welcoming in. But yeah, we've literally had a stampede this weekend.
It's been interesting, isn't it? I mean, I've got three of them and all going to various different schools, a couple that are starting here today, another going back over in the UK, etc. But the house has just been... there's just name tags everywhere around the house.
Yep, that was my experience. So my husband scarpered off to the football at 3 o'clock yesterday and left me with the lunch boxes, the name tags, the preparations, the shoes, the socks, everything. And yeah.
Tell you one little thing, and I wonder whether this is something that resonates with other parents out there and those that have been battling with the back to school stampede at the moment. But it's these sort of instruction lists you get from the schools, you know, which are pretty detailed and pretty impractical in many ways. I suppose there are certain things that, you know, not naming names with regards to different schools, but, you know, instructions coming from certain schools saying do not use black marker pens to name or put initials onto bits and pieces here, or do not use this type of name tag, etc. And it's just really, well, surely parents need to have that sort of ability to be as practical as possible.
Well, I agree. I mean, you know, I've got two now in school, so it has to be a well-oiled machine to get them both out the door in the morning. And, you know, for me as a working mum, I have to make life easy for myself. So, you know, if the shorts aren't available in the shop, I am going to Decathlon and I'm buying the generic brand rather than the school one.
Being so, an interesting one, that's for sure. We had a big chat here on the agenda last week about school uniforms, the price they're in as well, because that's the other thing to take into account. I'm sure this is something you're conscious of in keeping your clients, you know, loyal clients happy as well, but also you're running a business at the end of the day and you need to get your stock in, and it is just how costly an affair it can be.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, aside from the uniform, you've got the shoes, the trainers, all the other bits and pieces, the goggles, everything. I mean, people come and buy things from us. We do try to provide really good quality. So if you're buying a bag, it will last for about 2 years, you know, depending on the wear and tear. But if you're using that lunchbox every day, you're talking a matter of fills per day, you know, for really high quality lunchbox. And, you know, we don't want something that's going to break after, you know, a few weeks or a term. So that's, you know, we stock really good quality stuff. That's the priority for me.
Great to have you with us here, Camilla. I'm going to dive into a few of your stories in just a few moments' time. Your partner in crime today out there on the floor to give us all the latest from the weekend paper review, making a debut, first time here with me in the studio. It is the co-founder of Protein Bake Shop here in Dubai and across the UAE. Saad Amrani joins us live in the studio. Saad, thank you first and foremost for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Really kind of you to come on in. And as is befitting round about this time, Protein Bake Shop, and it needs little introduction at the moment because it's taken the city by storm. But give us your sort of 101 on it. Why Protein Bake Shop for you?
Well, thank you so much for your kind words. We're just trying to solve a very simple problem here. We're just trying to make your regular food, like, you know, Bounties and the Kit Kats, just taste good. You know, healthy food, when we think about healthy food, we think about bad tasting food. And so what we're just trying to do is solve the problem of making healthy food actually taste good and hence becoming a part of your lifestyle instead of a chore that you actually do. So healthy food is kind of like, oh man, I have to eat healthy. Oh my God, this is a task. Why should it be? It's because of the taste. And so we're just trying to solve for that problem at Protein Bake Shop.
So do you think that, I mean, obviously part of your business plan is providing the finished products, the finished foods. But do you think it's also part of education? Because, I mean, you use the word protein in the title of your company as well. Has it got to that point now when there's so much information out there about fad diets and diets and this? Do we really understand what protein is these days?
I think so. I think protein is here to stay. So there's some things that are fads. They come, they go. Paleo, I think, was one of those fads. I mean, people don't do it anymore. I think gluten-free is here to stay. I think protein is definitely here to stay. One thing people try to sort of ask me is they ask me all these nutrition questions, and I don't realize that I really don't know anything about nutrition. And so we're two people in the company. I have my co-founder, Rashi Chaudhary. She's a nutritionist. And so she's the one designing all the recipes, doing all that education, doing all the marketing behind it. My job is to make sure we dominate the world with this thing.
Good on you. And you're on course for that at the moment, yeah?
Inshallah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
How's things going here in Dubai? I mean, it's competitive, isn't it?
The response has been fantastic. Yeah. I think there's the repeat customer is great. So I think that's the most important thing. Once people try it, it's about getting them to try it once. Once they try it, they're hooked. And I think that's the sort of reassuring thing for me, that people are coming back for the product.
I suppose it's rather fitting that we're talking about back to school at the moment, because one of the focuses in recent years, and more so than this year, has been that focus on healthy lunchboxes, on healthy food within schools, of trying to get as much nutrition into the younger generations, our students, our children at the moment, whilst they're at school. Is that something you focus on as well?
We have been trying to talk to schools about this. There's definitely a lot of education that has to be done. Schools are proactively educating children on how to read labels. I think that's a great thing. So if you can't pronounce it, don't buy it. I think that's super, right?
Yeah.
And all these chemicals coming on these ingredients. So schools are also, they have their own rules. They want nut free. We've developed something nut free as well for that. So we're talking to them, we're engaging with them and seeing how we can sort of do more for them. But education is definitely something that we are focused on.
Yeah.
Children education, it's very important. Diabetes is, as you know, is all time high here, especially in the Middle East, you know. So we're trying to solve for that problem.
It's interesting, isn't it, Camilla? Because that seems to be one of the focus. I mean, you're talking about lunchboxes and how you get them there, etc. And then that focus, not just on the style you get them there, but also the content of that box as well.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my daughter tells me, Mummy, you're not allowed to put that in the lunchbox if I've sent something in, which I think's okay. And she's like, no, you're not allowed to put that in or that. No chocolate, no nuts, no unhealthy snacks. So my school's pretty hot on good, healthy lunches. But yeah, you know, my kids get fruit, veg, sandwiches, crackers, the usual suspects.
Your thoughts, please. 4001. Have you battled the back to school, back to work thoroughfares this morning? If so, what was it like? There was so much dread going into the morning drive this morning, the morning commute for so many individuals out there. Did it live up to those expectations, or was it something of a surprise? There's been a lot of work on the roads over the summer months. A lot of intersections have been completed to try and ease traffic in certain bottleneck areas. Has that been the case, or is it something that you were dreading in terms of getting to and from school and work earlier today? And how was that traffic? Thoughts, please. 4001 on all of these stories and more. We're going to have more from Saad, more from Camilla, and more from the rest of the team after these.
If you're talking about it, we're talking about it on The Agenda with Tom Urquhart, only on Dubai Eye 103.8.
It's your mid-morning phone-in right here on Dubai Eye 103.8. It is a Sunday morning. It's back to school, back to work for the new academic year 2018-19. So feel free to share your thoughts on how it's been over the last few hours with us this morning. Traffic, okay. Getting in and out of school, okay. How's it all been with your new setups? Then do share your thoughts with us. In the meantime, though, we are in studio in the presence and the company of Camilla Hassan. Camilla's the brains behind Five Little Ducks, and Saad Amrani, who is co-founder of Protein Bake Shop. They have kindly selected a couple of stories that we're going to delve into in a few more details now. And we're going to start with one that has been followed by a number of news sources here with good reason and interest. Camilla, I turn to you. So Skype, I'm just going to use the one word, because it's one word that resonates with so many residents here. What's the latest?
So Microsoft is hopeful that the ban is going to be lifted on Skype in the region, which is obviously really positive news for both businesses and for individuals. So obviously this was banned last year in the region, along with a lot of other voiceover IP services, which had a massive impact. Businesses that were using Skype to make international calls, and as well as people, obviously a lot of expats over here wanting to keep in touch with their families back home, and not having that service, you know, there were alternatives offered. However, now we're hoping that the UAE authorities and Microsoft will reach a solution and lift the ban, which will obviously be great news for everybody.
It's great, great news. And I mean, it's a difficult one to discuss, isn't it? Because you sort of understand some of the reasoning behind the controls over Skype here in the region at the moment with regards to the sort of the monitoring of security and safety, et cetera, across the country. But equally, when it's a tool that is just being so readily used and relied upon the world over now, not just in terms of catching up with your mum and dad over in Australia or wherever it might be, but businesses, in the media, a lot of interviews are now being done on Skype, etc. In recruitment, a lot of interviews are being done. Takes away from, you know, with the conference calls, etc. It's adding a whole new dimension to business worldwide. And that's why it seems strange, isn't it? A place such as the UAE, such a hub for business, is not embracing this at the moment.
I know, it's such a shame. I mean, I bring products from all over the world, and I have suppliers in the US, in Australia, New Zealand, the UK, and they're like, oh, let's have a Skype call to arrange the details. I'm like, sorry, we can't have a Skype call. So it is frustrating, because then you are using, you know, your regular phone line to ring people. So for business, it's definitely a blow not having that service. And if it could be brought back, I think it will, you know, help a lot of businesses in the way they run things.
So it's good to see that businesses will be waiting with bated breath to see what comes of this. But it's good to see that the TRA here, the Telecommunications Regulatory Authority, are in negotiations and talks with Microsoft and Apple and the like. So that can only be a good thing.
I think it's super important. I think, you know, we're trying to get all these big guys to come here, open regional offices. We're trying to get innovation to be started here, trying to boost that innovation culture. Dubai Future Accelerator is doing all of this. And then we have basic things like Skype and FaceTime blocked, right? Mm. I mean, it's difficult. I mean, how do you convince Apple to say, come here, hey, Apple, come here, open an HQ here for Middle East, and but by the way, your FaceTime is blocked, right? So I think these are things that we really need to look at. There's absolutely a communication problem, like Camilla mentioned, definitely. But then there's also an innovation kind of, open-mindedness, the image outside of the UAE, also, that I think is very important with these technological bans.
Yeah, I think that's a good point, because fundamentally, this is it's all about efficiency, isn't it?
Yes.
And streamlining your business, streamlining your communications, etc. This would make that easier from a global perspective and point of view. And this is what the city lives and breathes. It is all about efficiency and innovation. So surely it can only be a matter of time.
I hope so.
From a business point of view, I'm sure as well.
I definitely hope so. I mean, we've been paying heavy Etisalat bills to overcome the Skype issue. So.
There are a couple of alternatives, though. There are legal apps you can get supported, which are Etisalat and Do. So they've sort of offered those alternatives. I know it's obviously not the same as Skype, but that's there as an option for some people.
Mm. The options are there and available. Does this story fill you with hope? Does it give you a little bit of optimism with regards to the ongoing issue? Because time and time again, we've seen it, haven't we? When certain stories come up and you can't work out whether it's real news or fake news because, has the Skype ban been lifted because somebody's been able to get on, then they can't get on again after that. So it would be just nice to get a little bit of clarification on this, surely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it'd be welcome news. A lot of families as well wanting to reach their loved ones at home. So let's hope. Fingers crossed.
Go on, sir.
I found a breakthrough in this. I mean, I used to work out of a serviced office in Rove, and I realized in hotels Skype works.
Oh, it does it?
Yeah, okay. It's weird, isn't it? So in Rove Hotel, for sure, it works. So I used to
it
work
won't
out
do it after this conversation.
But there we are. See, there is an option opportunity out there for all. Saad, let me turn my attention to you if we can. You've come up with a couple of good stories as well. This is a phrase that we use time and time again. I've got two of them in front of me, two entrepreneurs who set up their own businesses, who are ploughing a furrow in their respective fields. Again, we go back to this whole idea of laws as well. But are entrepreneurs getting the right support here in the UAE?
This is a tough one, I think. I'd say yes and no. I think there are, UAE has its own unique challenges, but then the government itself is very open to innovation and new ideas and fostering all of that. I mean, I think one of the biggest examples we see here is an Emirates Tower there, the Dubai Future Accelerator, where you have all these government entities sitting there with dedicated people there for startups to come apply and work directly with the government. I don't think this kind of a program exists anywhere. So you definitely see the government making an initiative to sort of foster innovation and new ideas and entrepreneurship. But then on the ground, there are some basic challenges that we have as entrepreneurs that would not exist in any other country. I mean, a simple thing like onboarding somebody here, bringing somebody on, paying their visa costs, paying their, you know, in and out, paying their health card, Emirates ID. You're talking about deposit, talking about 12,000 dirhams one-time cost to bring one person on. That's hefty, you know, for a startup like us. It's a big number. I mean, for the bigger guys, it's just a blip. But for guys like us who's just starting off, it can be 20%, 10% of your revenue.
But equally on top of that, I mean, that's 12,000 on a piece of paper, you know. Yes. But then when it comes down to the practicalities and they need a little bit of help setting up and they need some money for a deposit and they need this, that and everything, it all adds up, does it not?
It does. I mean, even with the license costs, it's expensive, right? Yeah. I mean, and not only is it expensive, that's fine, but the process is super lengthy. Like, first of all, you start to say, where should I open a company? There's like 47 zones and then every zone has its own rule. And then you're like, okay, so what is the paperwork? And then there's printing and scanning and all. It's a journey, you know. I think if that problem was to be solved, a lot of it would be solved. Mm. And it's not something that's a problem that hasn't been solved. I mean, you go to US, you can open a company $50 overnight, right, with your social security number. I think we should have something similar. That would really, really help the entrepreneurship space. People start new companies, make the barrier to entry easy. Most people don't start because just to start, open a company, you're talking about 60K. Right? You don't have that kind of money.
Yeah. Right? Today, the UAE ranks 21st in the ease of doing business by the World Bank, a number that's been going up year on year. Camilla, is it a good time to be an entrepreneur?
I mean, I think so. Obviously, in the retail space, it is a bit tricky at the moment. Although I have to say, you know, we've had a great start. But honestly, I mean, I appreciate everything Saad has said, but once you're up and running, I think things are much easier. You know, obviously, VAT is something that we've had to really focus on as a retail business and make sure everything's properly audited and correctly monitored in terms of VAT. But I actually think doing business here is pretty straightforward. You know, things happen a lot quicker. I do appreciate there are those challenges that Saad has mentioned, but I actually think that, you know, if you've got a great idea and you run with it, the one thing about, you know, setting up a business and putting those upfront costs down is you have to really believe in your idea. Mm. And if you really believe in it and you know that there's a lot more at stake, I feel you're more likely to succeed. Whereas if it costs you, I don't know, $50 or whatever you said, then you could start it and close it and that's it, you know. But over here, because the costs are higher, you have to really, you know, put everything into it to make it a success.
It's an interesting time to be having this conversation, because before the summer, obviously, we had a raft of executive decisions, a raft of new laws were tabled as well to seemingly make things easier for foreign ownership in companies, long-term visas to select investors and professionals, just two of the sort of initiatives that were going. That was, what, end of May, beginning of June of this year. Then we've obviously had the long summer break. Now we're back into what will be a very busy end to the year. I suppose one of the challenges here is great initiatives there, but as we know with all initiatives, and especially when it becomes through a legal framework, it takes a little time for those to be kicked into the system themselves.
Yeah.
So we need to wait and see really what impact they will have.
Absolutely. Yeah. These are things, I mean, nobody I think can really comment on unless you're in the government talk about these things, right? So I mean, I know it's a process and things have been improving, you know, as we go along, and I think they will continue to improve as we move along. And so it's going to be steady now. Yeah, you said they were talking about 10-year visas.
Yeah.
I think that's a great thing.
Yeah.
I'm just waiting for it to be launched, right?
Yeah.
And then they said in 2018, you don't need an LLC partner to start a company. I think that's a fantastic thing. So I'm just waiting for these things to come into play. I think these will really ease business. And as we go along, I think these improvements will make it easier for us to do business.
Watch this
space. We'll go from 21 to top 5, inshallah.
There we go. That's what it's all about. Get up those ranking lists. That's what it's about, isn't it?
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
84001 if you want to get involved in the conversation. Thank you very much indeed to you all. Thanks for the updates as well. This one from one of our listeners out there saying Skype works on all corporate accounts but not individual ones. Thanks for that update for that one. And thanks also to Ryan for his thoughts and opinions this morning. Ryan saying the issue is the alternatives to Skype have been poorly tested and do not really function. Plus, these are paid options, so how do we as customers get value from this? Ryan, thanks very much indeed. You can do the same and text your thoughts on 4001. I'm in conversation in studio here with Camilla Hassan, who is the founder and managing director of Five Little Ducks. And we've got the co-founder of Protein Bake Shop, Sada Marani, is with us as well here in studio, giving us thoughts on some of the stories that have caught their eyes. Camilla, I turn to you because here's a story that I've talked about endlessly over the weekend with friends and colleagues, because a big move over in the United Kingdom last week with regards to energy drinks. That was an announcement by the Prime Minister over there, but it's had ramifications the world over, has it not? How do you, you know, as a mother, but also as somebody who's very much involved with the sort of school environment as well, how do you react to this? Is this long overdue?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they're absolutely not suitable for children at all. And they contain high levels of caffeine, lots and lots of sugar. There's no health benefits of energy drinks on children whatsoever. So I don't think parents should be giving them to their, you know, children anyway, certainly not in schools. The doctors here are urging the UAE follows the example of the UK and makes it absolutely illegal for children to purchase them. And I agree with that move wholeheartedly.
Saad, I want your thoughts on this one because obviously, you know, part and parcel of your success thus far with Protein Bake Shop as being nutritional values of what we put into our body. Is there any argument that can be, can we argue for energy drinks at all or not?
I mean, in my opinion, probably not. I'm just hoping they do the same thing to sugar and really be in business.
Would help, yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
I mean, all our stuff is sugar-free, and the moment they start putting a tax on sugar like they did on tobacco, man, it will be like super competitive pricing. So I think it's a great initiative. They did this with tobacco here, they're doing it with energy drinks. I think it's great.
Well, we've seen an initiative recently, haven't we? We've seen energy drinks by going up by 100% in price as well. And that has put people off to a certain degree because they have become very expensive. You know, if you go out to a hotel or something like that and you try and order one of these energy drinks, then it could be anything up to 30, 40 dirhams in order to get that drink. We saw it with soft drinks as well. By banning them outright, though, are we not running that risk, Camilla, of making them more attractive to teenagers maybe?
Well, you've got to look at it, I think, as a health issue. There was a child that was actually hospitalised recently because he'd mixed an energy drink with a latte. So all that caffeine in a young person's body, it really can affect the heart. For me, I think we could ban it for under 16s or under 18s who perhaps don't have the sense not to mix those drinks or, you know, perhaps would think to have three or four of those drinks. Obviously, as an adult, you've got that informed decision if you want to drink one of these every so often. But for children, I think it should be completely banned. Yeah. Mm.
We know that the UAE has made immense efforts to cut down consumption of any energy drinks for all ages. Some places around the UAE, there's no sort of blanket law as such as yet, but some places have taken the initiative and banned selling energy drinks to people under the age of 16. Sharjah, however, the municipality there, recently banned selling energy drinks to those under the age of 17 and also banned cafes and food outlets from mixing energy drinks with anything else as well. So that's an initiative taking place over there. I mean, I suppose the age thing is key here, is it not, Saad? Because when you get to your teenage years, you're looking to express yourself, you're looking to experiment. If energy drinks, given that, I suppose half the problem here, and I don't know if you agree with me here, but half the problem is the branding, is it not, and the advertising, because they are seen to be cool and they are involved in a number of very, very attractive extreme sports and other events and bits and pieces, and therefore it appeals to teenagers and even those younger.
And they give you wings.
And they give you wings. Certain brands, that's for sure, yeah.
No, I mean, I absolutely agree with you. I think age is a key thing. I think for gyms, for a certain age group, I think it could help give you that extra energy. Everything overdone is bad for you.
Correct, yeah.
Right? So it applies here as well. So I mean, it's I think it's a I mean I don't know it's UAE did this to tobacco, right? Mm. They put a double the tax on tobacco. They've done this now to energy drinks. It's a conscious decision that they're making to make their city, their country healthier.
Yep.
I think there's nothing wrong with that. I think they should do the same to sugar. I think they should do the same to everything that's affecting their population. Diabetes, obesity has become a big issue in the region, and they're just trying to counter that by putting in these measures. I think that's a great thing. Mm. I think if you and I had a office where people were becoming obese or, you know, getting diabetes, we would do the same thing, right?
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the other side of this argument is, whether it be here or anywhere else in the world, is that do children under the age of 16 need that much more energy? I don't know. Most of the examples I know, just they could deal with a little less hyperactivity other than anything.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. I think over here as well, we drink a lot in terms of liquids. So drinking lots of water. My children maybe get one juice on a weekend, but the rest of the time we buy actually Paw Patrol water and My Little Pony water, because then they get really excited about drinking those. So trying to get people to make healthy choices, there is a responsibility on brands to push people into more healthy, you know, decisions. It's really difficult in the supermarket when you've got very sugary cereals and things which are branded with cartoon characters, because the kids go, you know, make a beeline for those. So yeah, when it comes to making choices for your children, it's very difficult when you're up against, you know, strong advertising.
I want to hear from listeners out there on this one, because it's interesting. You know, every time I have this conversation, everyone goes, yeah, I never drink them. Oh, I never touch them with a barge pole. But somebody is. Obviously, somebody out there is, because it's a multi-billion dollar industry worldwide. So what is the argument for energy drinks at the moment? Hanan?
Well, I think a lot of people like them as a sort of pep me up, you know. I mean, personally, I would go for a coffee, and too much caffeine in my body, I go a bit loopy. I get the shakes.
Yeah.
But I mean, I don't know, people like it on a night out, don't they? Those sort of energy drinks. I don't agree with kids having them, though. It's like you were saying earlier, I mean, they do have too much energy now. So how can it be a good thing if they're having more? And the only reason they'd be needing more is if they're sort of, I don't know, not sleeping or... But
I think this is a problem. I think this is one of these where the education needs to come in a little more, because we use this phrase energy drinks, much like we use the phrase protein bars or something like that. You go into your average convenience store now and you will have an entire aisle dedicated to so-called protein or energy bars, etc. And I'm assuming, I'm no nutritionist, but I'm assuming not every single one of those is good for you, and not every single one of those promises will deliver what they promise on the packet. Therefore, is it the same with energy drinks, where we've got very well-known brands that that a lot of people go are energy drinks, but you go into any shop, you will have entire fridges full of different brands of energy drinks. Which ones are good for you? Which ones are bad for you?
Yeah, well, some of them look quite dodgy, to be fair. But I mean, I would say that energy drinks in general, not particularly good for your body, are they? I mean, the amount of sugar and caffeine in them, there's obviously, you know, that's not necessarily good for your body, is it?
Yeah, but at the same time...
I'm guilty of having energy drinks when I was young.
Yeah.
I used to have them before my exams. So the morning, you used to have an exam at 8, and then you want to study the whole night. And so you're like, what do I do? And then you just have an energy drink, maybe 2, and then your heart really beats and you still...
And did it help you function, or did it make you worse?
Just... helped me stay up all night, and if I had too much, then I'd be jittery in my exam, which was a bad idea.
Yeah.
So I had a friend who used to take one before. I used to play netball, and she used to have one before she played, and we could always tell because she was absolutely nuts on the court when she'd had it, not in a good way. So we had to ban her from having one.
But okay, so here's the, and this is probably when I get lambasted for being a bad dad and everything like that, but that's fine, bring it. Because, you know, my 11-year-old plays rugby, goes up to rugby sevens, new season starts now. His, you know, he'll be out there for a couple of hours practicing and playing. They sweat a lot, they run around a lot, etc. His go-to at the end of that, his please, 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 can I have, is a certain brand of American energy drink that you would, how do I get around it without mentioning it too many times, that you can find in all sorts of different colours in just about every shop you go to here. And it's very well known with NFL back in the United States, etc. My equation being, he's just run around for 2 hours, he's sweated, he's been energetic. If he wants that, is that a bad thing?
Yes.
But is it a rehydration, one that rehydrates, or is it just one that's purely for...
Well, again, that's what it says on the same argument could be levelled at a variety of drinks, isn't it? The rehydration drinks as opposed
true.
To... But they've all... But that's the thing, because they've all been... subject of this 100% tax increase.
But I will tell you that energy drinks contain 60% more calories and 65% more sugar than regular soft drinks. So I'm partial to a Diet Coke, guilty, love them. I love the taste. Energy drinks taste disgusting and they look like battery acid. My husband loves them and he's not allowed to drink them around the children because I go, Daddy, can I have some of your special juice? No.
Mm.
No, they're very bad.
I just think there needs to be, because again, I take your point, and I think that the fact of the matter is, okay, on that same argument, so if we go out for a family supper or something like that, and as a treat, they will want a certain soft drink that has been served for years and years and years, and is very well known.
Fizzy
but,
pop.
Is it brown?
It's the same price increase for that as it is for an energy drink at the moment. So where's the lineation? There needs to be more clarification on this whole thing.
I think it's that they're all full of sugar and they're all, you know, arguably they're not very good to be sort of drinking too much of.
But you can ban everything except for Diet Coke.
Diet Coke. I think you should ban sugar, like I said.
Stop with the no sugar.
I think.
Tom's going to fight you for this.
This Diet Coke has no sugar. But they
it's
use
got
it,
one calorie.
They have no sugar. And they have chemical sweetener. I think it might be worse than the Red
They're
Bull.
Worse for you.
So if I had the option.
I would go, I go full fat over the diet, yeah. I used to do the diet stuff, but that's actually worse for you.
Yes. Okay. Oh, we agree. High five.
It's all opinions. Camilla, it's all opinions. It's fine. You know, it's all opinions.
It's time to have your say. The Agenda with Tom Urquhart on Dubai Eye 103.8.
I do hope you're well out there on the roads of the UAE, in your offices, at your homes, at school, wherever you may be today. I hope it is all well. And do share your thoughts with us on 4001. We've got ourselves into a bit of a pickle about energy drinks here in the studio. I'm in conversation with Camilla Hassan, Saad Amirani, Hanan's here as well, giving us her opinions. And you are giving us your opinions as well. Sam, thank you very much indeed to you for your text message. We'll be in touch with you because I have a feeling this is a story that may fly in the coming days as the debate continues. So thank you for that one. And thanks to Kyle as well for being in touch. This is what Kyle has to say. It says, difference between energy drinks, replenishing drinks, sports drinks. Read the label, however, need to take with caution. Kids under around 16 years should be avoided for all drinks unless they have undertaken extreme physical activity where replenishment is needed to get normal levels back to normal quicker. Okay. Thanks for that, Carl. 4001, if you want to get involved.
Yeah. You're looking a little bit like, oh.
No, I agree. And that makes so much sense, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But then I would proffer the same argument that if we're talking about energy drinks or we're talking about soft drinks, we're talking about sugar in drinks, you know, what the difference between me going to a burger joint and allowing my child to have a soft drink as a treat on a Thursday or Friday, is that any different from a replenishing energy drink after a game of rugby?
No, probably not.
That's
probably
what I think
not.
He's saying, right? I think that's what he's saying.
And I think that's the line between what we were talking about earlier is like these energy drinks and then sort of sports energy drinks. Are they sports energy drinks? You know, ones that are actually doing something and replenishing your body with the you know, nutrients they need.
No, you're probably right. That's probably what Carl is saying. So is that... But then I suppose that's the thing. So if we're going into... So what am I doing wrong? I'm giving them soft drinks on a treat.
Yeah, but you can't have a burger without a soft drink.
Everyone does that, though, don't they? I think
who orders like a fresh orange?
Gives their child an occasional drink. Right. You're not that bad.
Move on. Let's move this conversation forward because let's turn to something a lot more realistic and conceivable. Saad, flying taxis.
Very realistic.
Yeah. Are they a reality?
Happening.
They're happening. They're working on it. Uber Elevate, right? I mean, I've seen the designs for it. You know, the transport space, cars, buses, the last innovation that happened in this space was a couple of hundred years ago, right?
I mean,
what have we seen after that? Trains, buses, cars, and then better cars and better trains and better buses. But no real, you know, disruption, no real technology to move people around faster. And I think the two of the most interesting things that are happening right now that could be potential game changers for everyone around the world is definitely the Hyperloop, if it happens. Dubai to Abu Dhabi in 12 minutes. Well, and because that will remove the definition of urban cities. It's just everything. You can live in Paris, work in Belgium, have a meeting in London. And then these flying taxis. Because you've now started using a space that's completely unoccupied. Nobody's doing anything with it, the air. And I mean, that leads to the other problems. Like, what if there's so many that you have to book air spaces and heights and stuff because you can't have roads in the air? And so, but these, I think, two innovations are super, super important. And if they do come through, they would have a huge impact on us as a generation.
We're talking about this one because they've just made more announcements that we obviously know. They've got programs over in Dallas and Los Angeles at the moment for their air mobility projects. But they've shortlisted these five mega cities, haven't they, that will benefit from it. Japan, India, Australia, Brazil. In Japan, India, Australia, Brazil and France as their sort of shortlisted countries to look at particular cities there. Again, I suppose it's one of those things, isn't it, where it would have a benefit on any city worldwide, wouldn't it?
Absolutely. I think they've picked one of the most highly densely populated cities with a traffic problem. So if you see Bangalore or these guys, they're super, super, super crowded. And these guys need it the most. And so of course, US first and then these other cities that they're going to try on. But I know that they've been talking to RTA as well on experimenting here with this autonomous, completely unmanned. You sit in it, takes you off, drops you somewhere, gets off and goes. I don't know how the logistics behind that will work. It's still a question, but I think it's super interesting what's happening with generation we're living in, because I think we will see it in our generation.
Yeah. I mean, the rate of the development of this one is extraordinary. I suppose it prompts that question to all of us, and I'll put it to you, Camilla. Would you?
No. Well, as much as I'd love to, you know, channel the Jetsons and Instagram that, you know, at the same time, I think that it's not very environmentally friendly. I'd be worried about giving control to a machine that nobody's driving it. If people are driving it, well, I've seen the driving here and that makes me nervous. I'd be interested to see it, but I let other people try it before I went in one.
Extraordinary. I mean, when you just read between the lines on what they're talking about here, and Saad was talking there about, you know, seeing it in our lifetime, you know, they're suggesting that we mentioned that short list of five. So five countries around the world looking at congested cities within those countries. So Tokyo, Osaka, Bengaluru was one of them, Mumbai as well, to mention a bit of food. But the commitment they're making to them is saying, look, once we've made this selection, in the next 5 years, 5 years, and all, think about what we were doing 5 years ago, and it's not that long ago, Uber customers in those launch cities will be able to literally push a button and have a flight turn up.
Where will it turn up, though? Will it land on the roof?
It'll just hover above you and then pick
pads,
you up.
Helipads, I guess.
With a little ladder that comes down.
Those things you find at the fairgrounds, you know, when you have to try and get the fluffy toy.
So the biggest issue is...
Yeah, and how many times do you grab the fluffy toy?
I mean, the biggest issue is not the thing itself, the flying, because we've achieved flight, right? The biggest thing is, how does it land? Where does it land? How does it take off airspace?
Will it make an impact?
It's a logistic.
Is there enough usage of it to actually make an impact on the roads? Right now, it's going to be for the VVIPs and the Instagrammers that are all going to want to get the Uber flying taxi.
I mean, if I want to work in Abu Dhabi and live in Dubai, and then I can do it this way in 5 minutes.
Really exciting.
I would do it.
How much is it going
to
cost?
I want
to
know that.
See, that's the other question. So these are the questions that need answering. Not the question that doesn't need answering is, can we do it? Yes, we can do it. Definitely we can do it. It's about, how can we do it efficiently, effectively, without harming people, landing, taking off? How can we solve for these problems more than, can we get a person from A to B in a plane? Yes, we can.
Is it going to be environmentally friendly?
I think it will be.
100%.
Yes.
Electric.
Plug it in.
Uber all over the way. So the lines are live. Just a quick reminder of those numbers. Text on 4001 at DubaiI1038FM if you're on Twitter. Hashtag DubaiI1038 on other social media platforms. You can also get in touch by texting on 4001. Thank you very much indeed to you all for your text, Sam, and others as well. We will, of course, follow up on each and every one of those texts. Now, plenty going on. A number of us are looking for the end of summer, but summer is still upon us. Hanan's got details of what we can do to make the most of it.
Well, we can take an Abra. We can cruise through the water of Madinat Jumeirah if you haven't done that. And there's a chance to dine at three iconic and diverse restaurants, the Hyde, Zenghi's and Tortuga. And yeah, it's really nice. And you can go to jumeirah.com/90ways for more information.
Get involved and help set the agenda. Text 4001 or message us for free on the Dubai Eye Messenger app.
Camilla Hassan is founder and managing director of Five Little Ducks here in studio. And we'll turn our attention to the skies yet again, not the Uber taxi system that we've just been discussing before we went to the news there, Camilla, but the Khalifa Sat, which has got a launch date. Is that right?
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's happening on the 29th of October and it will launch into space from the Tanegashima Space Center in Japan. So it's an Emirati-designed satellite, which is under the Space Centre. Mm. Sheikh Hamdan bin Mohammed, the Crown Prince of Dubai, he's the chairman of the Mohammed bin Rashid Space Centre, and he's very proud of this achievement from the Emirati team.
It's a good one, isn't it? Because obviously we've had satellites, the UAE have had satellites in the past, Dubaisat 1, Dubaisat 2. But I think the difference about this one is the first one that has been completely built and created here in the UAE at the Space Centre by Emirati scientists as well. So it's a great step forward and achievement for them.
It's fantastic. I mean, we don't really hear too much about the space programme here, but it's a great achievement for all the people within the science and engineering fields over here, and just testament to really what the UAE can do.
We will keep a close eye on that one. October the 29th is when KhalifaSat will head into orbit as well from its launch pad over in Japan. 4001, if you want to share your thoughts with us on the space program here in the UAE. We've also got Saad Imrani here in the studio. He's the co-founder of Protein Bake Shop. And you were talking about world domination a little earlier on. I wonder what you would do if one of the biggest F&B retailers came and knocking on your business at the moment. I'm asked this because Leisure Group Whitbread has agreed to sell the UK's biggest coffee chain, Costa, to a certain Coca-Cola. 3.9 billion sterling, not a bad price tag.
Yeah, I think it's the fastest growing drink in the world right now. Coffee. Right?
Really? It still is that that still the case?
Yeah, absolutely.
Really?
I mean this acquisition is just a testament to that, right? Coca-Cola is dominating not only drinks but other things, food as well. And this just makes sense. It just makes sense to get into the other drink category, which I don't think they're very actively in, and acquire it and make it happen. So, I mean, it just makes a lot of sense.
I like, you know, I'm not a numerically a sort of wired individual, and I'm not very good with figures, but I like this one. When Whitbread got hold of it back in 1995, so what we're talking about, best part of 23 years ago, they bought it for 19 million and it had 39 shops. They've scaled it, obviously, it's gone to 2,400 and the value's gone up to 3.9. So that's good business, isn't it? 19 million to 3.9 bill.
Super business. I mean, I was just listening to the radio station on my way here. They're talking about Man City and Sheikh Mansour's investment, right? In 10 years. I mean, this is what it is. Victoria's Secret, same thing. So when they sold La Senza 10 years later. I mean, these guys are known for that, right? I mean, they pick up a brand, they have all this distribution in all these countries, leveraging the existing infrastructure to further grow the brand and then, I mean, generate more from it, right?
Mm. Yeah. And I suppose the interesting thing about Costa as well is that, you know, I've been here for, 18 years or so now. I suppose I sort of miss that coffee revolution back in the UK, because that's only came on sort of post-2000. But, I mean, coffee shops were around before, but you didn't have to have your morning cup of joe that everyone seems to have now, etc. And so I always thought that Costa had more of an affiliation here. I didn't realise it was such a global brand until I didn't travel around, you see it. But then it's interesting to see that the first shop they ever opened outside the UK was actually here in Dubai. So there's been a close affiliation between the Costa brand and Emirates Airline have been closely affiliated with it through their F&B offerings as well. So it's something that's obviously grown up with the UAE and Dubai in recent years.
No, absolutely. Yes. I think what's also interesting is about the positioning of Costa Coffee and then the Coca-Cola acquisition, right? They're very premium, Costa Coffee. premium coffee. So it's interesting for me to see why Coca-Cola went after these guys as such, because Coca-Cola is more of the mass market domination.
Yeah.
Right. So that's also an interesting question I have in my mind after reading this one. I mean, you don't know about these things. They're speculations, right? Right now, yeah. Why would they do something like this?
I mean, there is certain observers are saying that it's going to be enable Coca-Cola to move away from what we've just been discussing, which is sugar-full drinks, to more healthy options. Is that an option?
Yeah, I mean, everybody's doing that in the U.S. I mean, recently RX Bar was acquired by Kellogg, $600 million. Skinny Pop, which is a healthy popcorn, acquired by Hershey's, $1.3 billion. Amplify Foods. And so these healthy food acquisitions are taking place a lot in the U.S. because all these big guys are realizing now that there's a certain movement towards the healthy space, and they don't have enough exposure to it. So they're picking up these brands for higher values to have exposure to it, because it takes a long time to build a brand. And the problem with building a brand is building trust. So if Coca-Cola says, listen, I'm doing another healthy product, people will not trust it.
Sure.
So they said, no, man, you did Diet Coke. Some people said Diet Coke is worse than normal Coke, right? This is a kind of a conversation topic. But, you know, when Coca-Cola says, I do another healthy drink, people don't trust it. So essentially what they're buying is the trust in these small brands that they have created in the sell off the back of that, if you see what I mean.
Camilla, good business, this one?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's a great acquisition, I think. Like Saad was saying, you know, the healthy category has gone much more mainstream now, and where, you know, there was always a small proportion of people doing the healthy and organic vibe, now it's everybody's into it. So, but what I like about Costa is they're continually, you know, reinventing their menu and innovating all the different drinks they offer. They now have all these dairy-free options. They've got a whole coconut menu with coconut milk. Of course, you've got your, you know, unhealthy drinks there, which are like basically a big dessert with all cream and chocolates and all the yummy stuff, but they also have the more healthy options as well, and I feel it's a much better quality than it's my coffee of choice when I'm drinking out.
To the other thing,
they
just
have a good coconut milk. Yeah,
do they?
Yeah, it's really just, nice.
The one thing that I mean, it comes as no surprise what Saad was just saying a minute ago about the quickest or the biggest growing drink sector in the world, F&B sector in the world at the moment, because it always astounds me how you just drive around, you see the number of coffee shops, the number of different brands. Not just here, I spent a lot of time in London over the summer as well. You go into London, you can guarantee a queue in any single coffee shop you walk into. And I don't know what it is. I mean, is it to do with the branding? Is it to do with but any single, you walk into a Starbucks, you walk into a Cafe Nero, you walk into a Costa, you can guarantee there's going to be a queue there at any time of the day. And I just find it phenomenal.
Yeah, you're pretty much right, actually. I haven't thought about it, actually. Yeah, it's true. I think people love their coffee, don't they? They love their coffee. It gives them a little pick you up,
but at all
you
times
like
of the
coffee.
Day I know I drink far too much of the stuff, but
yeah, but in the different times of the day you can have a different thing. Like you could maybe in the afternoon,
see,
you might go
get
for, say, hot chocolate, or you might have a decaf, or, well, you wouldn't, but you know,
no, hit me up,
there's
with
different options.
Short black
I'm just
single.
One coffee a day morning.
See, that's the thing, but I get that. So when I walk over the road in the way to the work every morning to get my coffee, I'm not surprised to see that there are hundreds of, well, not hundreds, but there is a long line of people who are doing that for their morning routine. What I find amazing is when I'm driving home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, or you're going out at, you know, 5 or 6 in the evening, and there's still queues in the coffee shops.
You can drink, if you ask me, I could drink coffee all day long. In fact, I have one of those pots at work where it just sits on its brewing station. And
oh, lovely.
Those
yeah.
are strong though, aren't they?
So good.
But then I can't sleep if I have coffee too late. At the weekend, I make an exception and I have a lit afternoon coffee. But otherwise, I'll be up all night.
Camilla, I'm a bit worried for you.
Why?
So you have a Coca-Cola addiction and a coffee addiction.
Yeah, what's wrong?
I don't know if they go well together.
It's got the dark
what about,
out there.
What about Red Bull addiction? If she had a Red Bull in there, then we'd be fine.
I draw the line somewhere, Gross.
You are listening to The Agenda. We've got a few more minutes with our friends here in studio. We've got plenty more minutes with you out there as well. So do text your thoughts through to us on 4001. And Anne's still in studio with us. We've bid adieu to Camilla and Saad. We'll have them back in soon. Chris, good morning to you.
A very good morning to you, Tom. Very good morning to the listeners. And yes, you say that there's gremlins in the system. There's a gremlin now with you as well this morning.
Oh, bless you, mate. Don't worry not, because we've got plenty to get through this morning. Let's start. Where should we start? Let's start with the cricket, if we can. Now, obviously, Fascinating test match, this one. Fascinating, fascinating test match. It is anyone's game going into the fourth day of this penultimate test match between England and India. It's been a great series. It has turned into a great series as well. Just want to preempt this with a story that's come out today here in the region, which will not go down well with cricket fans across the region. It looks like India's selectors will rest their prolific skipper, Virat Kohli, for the upcoming Asia Cup one-day cricket tournament here in the UAE.
Yeah, absolutely gutted by that news. Rohit Sharma will be the man who will lead India. A fine cricketer as Rohit Sharma is, the fact that we're not going to see the superstar of not only Indian cricket but world cricket in the shape of Virat Kohli, it is such a shame. We were excited, still remain excited, at the prospect of India taking on Pakistan middle of this month in Dubai, the first time that the two cricketing heavyweights have met in Dubai. But the fact that the main man himself, Virat Kohli, will not be here is a slight disappointment. But of course, India jam-packed with fantastic quality. I'm sure the fans, no matter that Virat won't be here, will be packing the Dubai International Cricket Stadium, because it's not often we get to see India taking on Pakistan. It is just a shame that Virat won't be taking to the crease.
UAE, for their part, bounced back yesterday from defeat to Hong Kong in the most convincing fashion possible with a crushing 8-wicket win over the host Malaysia in the Asia Cup qualifier last night. Nationals teams hopes of reaching the final later on this week have been thrown into doubt by a landslide loss to Hong Kong yesterday, which relegated them to third place in the six-team group. So we'll keep an eye on that one for you. UAE going about their business well, but India, England, all in the balance today.
It certainly is, Tom. I'm really looking forward to today's play because, as you say, it is in the balance. England will resume 260 for 8. That is a lead of 233 runs. And young Sam Curran, what a breakout series he's had. He is not out on 37. If he can push that score, I think past 260, 270, I'm perhaps dreaming a little, given the fact that it's Stuart Broad and Jimmy Anderson who will be coming in to help him out at the crease. But if England can make it competitive, get 250 plus, and that will give them a sniff of sealing this series. I think as a neutral, you of course want India to get the job done. That then sets it up beautifully, two apiece heading into the final match. And what listen, credit where credit's due. India 2-0 down in this series. They've came back, they won to make it 2-1. They're very much in this. You'd probably say they are in the ascendancy in this fourth test. If they can win it, Tom, they stand on the cusp of doing something that only one team in the history of test cricket has done, and that is come back from 2-0 down in a five-match test series to get victory. That was Australia, and you've got to go all the way back to 1936-37. Don Bradman inspired the baggy green to victory over England in the Ashes, as it was back then. So I think from a neutral perspective, we want India to get this win for England and for Joe Root. It's just about getting over the line, because the pressure gauge is starting to build on them after being in what we thought was an unassailable 2-0 lead.
India's seamers have been absolutely brilliant in this game, as they were in the last one as well. And it's I suppose that's been confounded by the fact that Ravi Ashwin hasn't been great in this game. He's been all over the shop, picked up a couple of wickets. But more to the point is the fact that the England batsmen seem to be getting themselves out. Joe Root running himself out, needless run there. Johnny Bairstow with bizarre shot straight after lunch as well. England seem to have this ability to shoot themselves in the foot when they don't need to.
Self-implode is exactly it, Tom, and they weren't helping themselves. We talked about this on the grill yesterday. Moeen Ali, who's had a fantastic, he's been brought back into the team. What was that, a 40 in the first innings? He then got a fiver in India's first innings, did Moeen Ali, batting at number 7. And then Trevor Bayliss, Joe Root, the decision was taken to move Moeen Ali up to bat at number 3. And what did he make? Just 9. So it's almost like England are a victim of themselves in many respects. Yes, okay, take nothing away from India, they're putting the ball in the right places, but England's top order, it is an issue. Alistair Cook making just 12, Keaton Jennings, who has rarely looked as if he is the long term answer to that opening batsman position, he made 36, and then Moeen Ali coming in at 9, Joe Root, not for the first time in this series, running himself out. We saw it in the first innings of the first test, Virat Kohli it was who got the prized wicket of his opposite number, Johnny Bairstow making just a duck. So England needs some of these players to step up, and in the case of Sam Curran, it is he that is doing so. He will, as I say, return to the crease 37 not out. And if he can get a half century and propel that score on, then England might just give themselves a fantastic opportunity of sealing this series' success.
Let's go to Formula One, because we've got a race for you later on this afternoon. Just before we tell you about the Italian Grand Prix and who starts on pole, Abu Dhabi have been unveiled as the prestigious position of the final race in the Formula One calendar in 2019, according to a draft released by the FIA in the last day or so. So it will retain its prestigious position for next year's draft calendar, which sees Australia opening things up on the 17th of March, Abu Dhabi closing things off on the 1st of December. Italy will retain its Grand Prix next year on the 8th of September. It comes a little earlier this year. Who's in pole? Chris McCarthy.
It's Kimi Raikkonen. It's the 38-year-old Finn, former world champion. You've got to go back to 2007 for the last time that Kimi Raikkonen won the F1. It's his only title, and he came through yesterday the quickest lap in F1 history. He averaged a speed of 163.793 miles per hour. The previous record, could go all the way back to 2004. Juan Pablo Montoya, remember him? Driving for Williams. That was the previous record. So astounding speeds that Kimi Raikkonen managed to get out of his car yesterday. He will start in pole. He's ahead of his Ferrari teammate Sebastian Vettel. And then the man who currently occupies top spot in the Drivers' Championship, Lewis Hamilton, in his Mercedes, will start on third. So it was a fantastic qualifying yesterday, one of the best we've seen in recent times. Kimi Raikkonen answering a few of his naysayers. The big question though, can he hold it together? Can he go and win wire to wire? That will be the big questions. Lewis Hamilton will be breathing down his neck. Certainly Sebastian Vettel, who starts the day 17 points behind Hamilton in the Drivers' Championship. And it may just be that team orders come into play at the back end of this race. If Vettel is close to Kimi Raikkonen, I will be interested to see if Ferrari ask the Finnish driver to move aside and let Vettel take the victory. So a lot of intrigue surrounding the Italian Grand Prix Monza. It all gets underway, I think, 4 o'clock, I think it is, UE time.
Round about then, 4 or 5-ish, they'll certainly be out on the grid, that's for sure. We'll get confirmation for that on you before we are off air. Let's get to the US. Now, let's go down to New York for the US Open, where the action continued overnight. Seeds falling in the women's draw, Kerber, Kvitova going, but not exactly the same story over in the men's draw. Some of the big guns going through.
Indeed, yes. Novak Djokovic making light work. And Robbie and I were talking about this one this morning. You always expect Novak Djokovic to have too much for Richard Gasquet. Roger Federer also safely through. He had a potential banana skin of a tie against the bad boy, if you will, of men's tennis, Nick Kyrgios. When he's on song, Nick Kyrgios, he is someone that can produce devastating tennis. And Roger Federer, early part of that match last night, looked as if he was going to be in for a battle, but he wore Kyrgios down in the end, taking a pretty straightforward straight sets victory. We saw one of the greatest shots as well last night from Roger Federer on the run to the net. It was a beautiful drop shot from Nick Kyrgios. How Federer made it, first and foremost, I don't quite know. And then the shot around the post, he didn't go over the net, he went around the post, it landed in. Nick Kyrgios' face told the whole story. He was aghast, open mouthed, and he actually said afterwards it was probably the greatest shot that he has seen on a tennis court. So Federer inspired last night. The heat of New York, he took to court at about 2:15 local time in Flushing Meadows, but he got through in straight sets. The match, I think, was about an hour and 35 minutes, because Roger, at the age of 37, it's all about conserving energy. He is on course to meet Novak Djokovic in the quarterfinal. Marin Cilic would probably be his semi-final opponent if he gets through that. And then we do know that Rafa Nadal will probably, if all goes to plan, be awaiting Roger Federer in the final. So it's vital that he conserves as much energy as he can, because you can bet your life there is no chance that Roger Federer, if he is to win this US Open, will beat Novak Djokovic, Marin Cilic and Rafa Nadal in straight sets. Absolutely no chance.
Round four concludes later on this evening. Games getting underway at 8 p.m. local time here in the UAE from the Arthur Ashe Stadium. Rafa Nadal first up on court against Basilashvili.
Glad you said it, Tom.
Basilashvili. Put your teeth back in, okay. They're first up. Then you've got Kanepi against Williams. So Nadal and Williams both on centre from early doors. Then Sloane Stephens takes on Mertens. Del Potro's in action against Coric later on. Over on the Louis Armstrong court, you've got Thiem against Anderson, Barty against Klepishkova, and Isner against Raonic. So plenty of the big guns in
yes,
action.
Yes, Isner-Raonic will be a battle of the big servers. Expect that one to be tiebreak, tiebreak, tiebreak. Maybe just tiebreak, tiebreak. You can go five sets. Expect settle in. I think that one gets underway 10:30 UE time. So make sure you clear your schedule. If you are a tennis aficionado, you will not be waking up early tomorrow morning. That one could go 4 or 5 hours, and it will be a serving slugfest, I would imagine.
Fascinating day of action over in the Gallagher Premiership. The what? The what? That's the old Aviva Premierships. Now the Gallagher Premiership. Danny Cipriani inspired Gloucester to victory over Northampton. Harlequins eased to a win over Sale. Exeter scored 6 tries to thrash Leicester in the opener. I suppose that was the biggest eye-opener of the day as well, that Exeter's dominance of this division continues.
Absolutely, yeah, 40 points to 6 against a Leicester side that I know was much fancied at the start of this season. I mean, that is undoubtedly the standout performance. Good win for Bristol as well. I know they've spent a lot of money. Steve Lansdowne, who owns Bristol City Football Club as well, he's put his money where his mouth is. So, yeah, some good opening games. I know you were delighted with Gloucester's success. Yeah. Eddie Jones, I think, was in the stands to watch Danny Cipriani. And he's an enigma, isn't he, Cipriani? But no doubt about it, he's got the X factor. And if he can put in performances consistently like he did, put all the nonsense off the field to one side, then he could just be the ace in the hole for England at next year's, or this next year, a year to the very day almost that we get underway with the Rugby World Cup. So a big season ahead for Danny. And then, as you say, later on today, it is Newcastle taking on Saracens. And so Premiership Rugby is back.
Yep, 6 o'clock kickoff, Newcastle Saracens. If you like your rugby with a little French and Gaelic flair, then Agen against Perpignan is the early kickoff, and then the Racing are back in action. They take on Clermont later.
Yeah, I read a real good article with Finn Russell, the Scotland fly half this morning, and he was talking up the fact he's enjoying the French experience. He was man of the match last week against Toulon, so very interested, as a proud Scotsman myself, to see how Finn Russell gets on in his home debut for Racing 92 a little later today.
Lots to look forward to there then, and of course the final rounds of the golf, but we haven't talked football yet, so we will do that in just a few moments' time and find out what Chris, Robbie and the rest of the team will be focusing on later on this afternoon on Sports Tonight and throughout the rest of the week.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.